It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot, and I've talked to a lot of people about it. I think the key thing to understand is that we're getting a much better understanding of how the seams of a baseball interact with the air as it moves to the plate. And a byproduct of that is the sweeping slider. There's a particular grip that guys use. It's known as the two-seam sweeper grip. It's kind of an interesting grip that guys have added. And what it allows you to do is cue curveball out of hand and create lateral break. I think that is the base summary. The craziest thing is that you have like 12 guys in this organization who've added this pitch as of a month or two ago.
12 guys in the organization have added the sweeper in the last month? What the hell's going on here? What in the wide, wild world of sports is going on here? Let's find out. It's Matt Spiegel, and it is Hit and Run. And this is the baseball show on 670 The Score on Sunday mornings. Inside the clubhouse was preempted yesterday in order to do Bump and Run. And David Haw did 2 hours of Bump and Run talking about the big Bears trade. And Lord knows this radio station will get back to that. And I will be a big part of it tomorrow with Parkins and Spiegel because it's awesomely exciting. But damn it, it's baseball season. Done a lot of World Baseball Classic so far today. Talked some White Sox with Chuck Garfine, which was fun an hour ago. Let's talk some Cubs and more with Lance Brusdowski from the Marquee Sports Network. And Lance, your background is intriguing and should be known to people because by now we've seen you on Marquee talking anything, frankly. Cubs, players, interviewing people, middle of the game. I saw you on a really interesting gambling cast with, who was it? Oh, yeah, it was with me and Danny Parkins on the app last year. Maybe we'll see each other there again. But you can do just about anything. But I love when you talk pitching, and you're on here to do that, among other things, on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Resort and Casino Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. You can talk grips and pitch design and finger placement and everything like that. Why? Why can you talk about that stuff? Where'd you learn about that stuff?
From a lot of people who are much smarter than me. I think that my strength has become talking to people who understand things at a higher level than I think I'll ever be able to understand, and trying to consolidate that information down and communicate it back to a general fan or someone who's interested in baseball, who maybe wants to know more or just enjoys kind of hearing some of the nuance and some of the advanced things going on. But yeah, it's a lot of talking to people who are really smart, asking good questions. And I've been really, really grateful enough to have worked at places that have supported that. I worked at Driveline Baseball for a little bit as like a remote video editor. So that was obviously a company that I think people are starting to understand more when you're hearing, you know, guys like Tim Anderson on the White Sox on the South Side going to Driveline and working with Driveline. They become kind of a household name. So that's kind of the crux of my information, really, is that it's the experience I've had and the people I talk to.
Yeah, you know, last week on this show, I had a chance to talk to Daniel Moskos and really...
Yeah, I love Dan.
Really, really enjoyed it and I think educated a lot of people on some stuff. So I don't want to cover some of the same ground, but
sure.
But what strikes me as similar, it's funny, is like the real strength of an organization can be, if handled correctly, having the people to communicate about this stuff to players. And that, so as you're saying, that's your niche, one of your niches that you've carved out over at Marquee and in the business, it's the same thing. It's reams and reams and pages of complex information. How do you figure out which stuff is actually useful and which is not, is the question.
trial and error is going to be my guess there. I definitely, if anyone has seen my content early on in what I is now becoming a bit of a career in this space, it was really complex and I went really deep. And I have to give credit to Marquee for allowing me to do that, especially on a pretty high profile network in one of the biggest markets in the country. Failing and listening to myself back and understanding what I don't even maybe understand what I'm saying back to myself watching video. That is when you start to understand, like, how much does the viewer actually need to know? Like, how specific do I need to get here? Yeah. Or is there a way I could step back and consolidate and really get the point across and push it towards, like, the grander picture, the macro picture of, like, okay, why does this matter? Like, that's the question you ask. I ask the most, right? It's just why. Like, okay, they're using this script. Why are they using this script? Oh, because it allows you to do that. So, okay, well, why do they want it in the repertoire? Like, keep following up with the why allows you to kind of consolidate and figure out, okay, at the end of the day, like, what is the first principle issue here? Like, what is the first principle thinking of this problem? Does it matter? Is that something that I think is important? Is it too complex? You know, are there different angles to it? You know, so I think the way I've kind of thought about everything that I do is, like, I'm going to present you with another side of things. Like, if maybe, especially communicating some of the analytics, right? I think people generally hate that term analytics. And are maybe somewhat resistant to hearing about why this guy got pulled with two outs in the fourth when he's at 70 pitches, but he's going through the lineup a third time. You know, like, that's a pretty standard one that everyone's like, why are they pulling this guy? That's incredible. You let him go another two innings or something like that. Like, I'm here to just present you with another side of the story. Whether you want to believe me or not, that's totally up to you. I'm not here to tell you that this is wrong, that you're thinking is wrong. I'm here to present another side of the story and then get out and let you decide. And maybe down the road, you know, 2 years from now, you're like, I remember that kid saying something about this. And, you know, I'm kind of coming around on it. That's probably the goal for me, right? Is like, I don't need to convince you in the moment. But if I could at least get that seed planted in your brain, maybe there'll be some benefit to it.
Lance Brzdowski from Marquee Sports Network is here with us on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. All right. So the sweeper slider, Lance, is designed to go a little bit more right to left as it comes out the arm of a righty and maybe get some more swings and misses. Is that a fair shorthand?
That's a great shorthand. Yeah, that guy who you intro'd this segment with said it pretty smartly, which was my hit on the broadcast the other day on the spring training broadcast.
Okay, good.
The Reds with Alex. But that's the idea. It's right to left.
Okay. And then tell fans the pitchers who have been taught this and are trying to learn it over the past month or so. And I'm sure some of them are going to be very low prospects that we won't see, but there's some on the big league level too. Rattle off some names if you would.
I almost need my full screen from that hit. I think I forgot some of them. But no, the two big ones are Jameson Taillon, the recent acquisition, obviously as a free agent, came from the Yankees organization, and Michael Fulmer, who was signed more so recently. He's been with the Twins and the Tigers in his career. Those, I think, are the two guys that if you're watching a Cubs game this summer and you see something moving and breaking across the plate that it looks a little bigger than maybe they've thrown in the past and generates a swing and miss, those are the guys that are throwing the sweeper that I think are the most well-known. Taillon's an interesting one because the Yankees organization has been pretty in on this pitch. They have, I think, the second highest slider percent usage throughout the minor leagues, only to the Mariners, who are number one. They throw this pitch a ton. They love it. You see, anytime you ever jump over and watch a Yankee game, you'll see a ton of those relievers in the back end, Clay Holmes, et cetera, throwing this kind of pitch. And it's interesting because Taillon is a guy who came from that organization. Everyone's like, wow, the Cubs taught him a sweeper. The Yankees didn't, you know, like that seems insane. But I think it was more a matter of him not being healthy for the most part and not being something that they got to, right? This isn't accelerating things like this generally take time. This is why I think, you know, you might ask why didn't the sweeper take off last year? It's like, well, you know, maybe they really didn't have the guys or have the aptitude or have the interest in kind of bringing it into repertoires, and now we're starting to see it a lot more. So those are the two guys. Fulmer is an interesting one too, because he threw a slider like 60% of the time last year.
Yeah.
And that, it seems to me like that was his pitch. So I think when he was signed, everyone was like, he throws this nasty slider. Can't wait to have it in the Cubs bullpen. And now what you're seeing is that they added a sweeper and changed that old slider to a slightly different pitch that has a little bit more depth now. So that pitch that he threw 60% of the time last year, and you could argue was the reason why they wanted Michael Fulmer, is now a different pitch, right? He's throwing the sweeper, which is the bigger lateral slider, and then he has a slightly different kind of more cuttery slider. They might both be called sliders. We'll kind of see how pitch classification does with them. But those, I think, are the two guys that are most important that are throwing this pitch.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I saw that about Fulmer, who reinvented himself as a reliever kind of out of necessity. And yes, leaned on the slider so much. And I thought, well, that was the light bulb. And now here he is being taught a different one. So they'll change it up because so often, like a change for a guy in a new organization is like, hey, stop throwing that pitch. It stinks. You know?
Yes,
it's like that kind of thing. Like history is littered, whether it's Garrett Cole giving up the two-seamers as soon as he got to Houston or, you know, other stuff like that. But it seems like the Cubs want to go deeper on pitch design. Marcus Stroman is not one of those guys, right? Stroman throws that slider that drops that 12-6. I guess maybe he has another one that we see a little bit. So is he open to all these conversations and the development of pitches, even though he was kind of a made guy when he got here?
Yeah, I think so. He actually does throw a version of the sweeper. This is where it kind of maybe gets a little bit nuanced, but he throws a sweeper. So you could say a sweeper is pretty much any pitch that moves right to left. That right to left, if you're a right-handed pitcher, say about 10 inches horizontally. And that's kind of a nerd thing. Like I assume everyone doesn't have the Baseball Savant second screen up that shows you pitch movement as I do, as you're watching games, you know, but I think the difference is that this particular grip and how quickly they're giving it to guys that allow them to unlock this pitch is a key. Wisniewski is another one that throws a sweeper as well, but Wisniewski and Stroman have slightly different grips than Tyone and Fulmer. Tyone and Fulmer are throwing this kind of two-seam grip that allows you to kind of cue curveball out of hand, creates lateral break, as you heard in the intro, because of how the seams of the ball interact with the air around it. Whereas a guy like Wisniewski and a guy like Stroman maybe have slightly tweaked grips. Like if you ever see their grips online or see an interview with them where they talk about the grips, they're just slightly different. And they have a more natural slot because they're a little bit lower three quarters that allows them to get around the ball and create that lateral break. Whereas the two-seam sweeper grip is a kind of almost like a cheat code to get that lateral movement. Mm. So Wisniewski's been throwing his for 3 years. You know, that's the key thing with Wisniewski. The thing that I think personally he's the fifth starter. I would be stunned if he is not. I think he's arguably, I was talking the other day with some people, I think he could have a better season than any one of Tyone, Steele, and Stroman. And that's how good I think he is. Yeah. And the key I think he's that good is because he throws this sweeper slider, but he's thrown it for 3 years, and his execution with that pitch is exceptional. And this is the wrinkle, right? You're learning a new pitch a month or two out from the season, you know? Like, how confident can you really be with that pitch in-game? A guy like Wisniewski has thrown it for 3 years. Like, I'm very confident that he will be able to execute that pitch continually start over start. Whereas a guy like Tyone, I wouldn't be stunned if there's a start or two where he just scraps the pitch, and then you hear in a post-game interview, I just didn't feel comfortable with it, I didn't have my feel for it. Whereas Wisniewski will have the feel for the pitch more times than not.
Yeah.
And the same with Stroman. Like, Stroman's thrown that pitch for a while, too.
Yeah, and I love the way Wisniewski talks about his work and how he's such a harsh critic of himself and also trying to keep things in perspective. I agree very, very high on that kid. Let's switch to position players for a second, since you've been out there and you've seen so much. You know, David Bote and Edwin Rios and Christopher Morel and Zach McKinstry. I guess we could throw Nick Madrigal in there, too. Of the five of those, how many of those really have a shot to make this team? And as I say those, I'm realizing that my Matt Mervis opening day roster dream is basically dead. Of those five, you got a feel for which one of those guys make this team?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I'd say that I would generally, on like roster decision stuff and construction, I generally defer to some of the beat writers. I think we have beat writers that do a really good job. If you just want me to purely guess, the guy that jumps out to me is Edwin Rios. If I had to guess, to answer your question, I'd say maybe one to two of them have a shot, I think. Maybe another, but I think I lean towards like a Madrigal making it and a Rios making it is my guess right now.
Well, why does Rios jump out at you? Tell me why.
Rios jumps out at me because he had a really, really strong career with the Dodgers, was like a huge OPS guy. He was basically like a 40% better than league average guy as an offensive hitter purely. And I think that is something that the team needs, especially with a guy like Suzuki. We'll see how long he's out. Like, it seems like he's going to miss maybe the first couple weeks of the season or something like that. Obviously, we've been kind of keeping in touch with Ross and seeing how he's doing in his rehab and whether he's still tightens in the oblique and such. Rios, I think, slots in as a guy that actually gives this team offensive upside. Like, this team is projected for 77.5 wins, right? That's a -110, depending on sports book you look at. It's not great. You're probably going to get to, like, the 85, 87 win mark to get into that third wildcard spot based on what we saw last year with the Phillies getting in and the Brewers being right behind them. Hmm. A guy like Rios, I think, gives you a little bit of offensive variance that you need. Suzuki was the key here, I thought. I thought Suzuki was a guy that could go up and put up 30 homers and be, like, a 30-40% better than league average hitter, which would put him in a tier of like the top 20, 30 hitters in all of baseball. And I think that if you're trying to outperform projections, you need a guy to do something like that. So Rios, I think, slots in as kind of your cheaper option to do so. Like, he's a lefty, so maybe he doesn't really face a lot of left-handed pitchers, but yep. he could be like a strong side platoon guy that has an OPS well above the major league average. He's taken some really good hacks in the live BPs I've seen. He took Drew Smiley deep left. I don't think he'll necessarily be hitting lefties in season, but mm-hmm. I think that the approach is strong. He's a guy that's been hampered by hamstring injuries for each of the last two seasons. I just don't think he's really got another chance, right? Like, yeah. He's never played more than like 40 games at the major league level in his career. It's been a mix of injuries and such. And the underlying traits, when you look back to 19 and 20 and when he was with the Dodgers, were fantastic. And the approach is good. The power is good. I think there's a reasonable chance he ends up being like a 20 to 30% better than league average hitter, and is just kind of the stalwart of this team. Him and Mancini are kind of my picks to give the team some power upside that I think they really need to outperform projections.
Yeah, I think Mancini's looked very good.
He looked great.
And very comfortable. One more on position players before we go back to pitching for a final one. You've got a chance to talk to a lot of the young prospects. You talked to Kevin Alcantara. What, is it the cheetah or the panther?
Jaguar.
I was so close. You talked to Alcantara. You've obviously seen Brennan Davis, who's at 100% this year. Saw a little bit of Owen Casey. Like, tell me one of those prospects that has jumped out to you and you're feeling good about.
Yeah, Owen Casey's the one that I have some access to minor league batted ball data, which, again, we're getting super nerdy on this. When you bring me on, you know you're bringing the nerd out. Batted ball data is essentially just like you see it pop up on the screen. Our guy hits a homer. It's like, okay, it's 107 off the bat or something. Major league average homer is like right around 104. So when you see this in a larger sample in the minor league, you can kind of parse out the data and understand how hard a guy is hitting the ball. Owen Casey's a guy that really jumps out when you look at these statistics. And, again, he's maybe in a similar situation. We're just talking about Edwin Rios, who's maybe more of a platoony bat where he's not really facing a lot of lefties. Casey's another guy I think that maybe is in that window. He's not really sure-handed in the field. I think they're still trying to figure out what position he ends up at. But he scorches the ball, and he's only 20 years old. It'll be his age 20 season. There's a really strong chance I think he starts at Double-A Tennessee. I think if he performs well there, he can maybe even make a jump up to Triple-A. You know, he doesn't turn 21 until July. I really like the combination of batted ball profile. The approach to the plate isn't crazy. He walks a reasonable amount of the time, so can support like a strikeout rate around 25%, a little bit higher. And he's only 20. And I think it may come down to him developing a little bit more. You see him in the World Baseball Classic right now. If you watch Team Canada, he's in there. He had a homer the other day. It's just a really loud bat. And I think that, you know, he may have gotten a little bit overlooked because I think a lot of people maybe look negatively on the Yu Darvish trade in terms of the return we've gotten, because he's pretty much the centerpiece right now of that return. Mm-hmm. There's not really anyone else, I think, in the mix of players they got back that has the highest probability of making some impact at the major league level. So if you see a guy like Owen Casey make it up and ends up being kind of an Edwin Rios type, or, you know, maybe it's crazy to think about, but maybe they even use them as some kind of trade bit if they end up with so many left-handed hitters that they don't really know what to do with that are more DHs. I'm talking about guys like Matt Mervis and Evan Rios and Owen Casey, like three left-handed bats that probably are all maybe more first baseman than anything. It's interesting, but I love his bat. I think he hits the ball hard for a 20-year-old. He'll go up to Double-A. You know, I've been really impressed with him. And Kevin Alcantara is another one where it's just the variance there is what you're looking for. Like, his levers are so long that we're seeing guys like O'Neill Cruz, and Ellie De La Cruz is this shortstop prospect for the Reds. He played some short against the Cubs at Sloan the other day. These guys are massive, and Alcantara fits into that same mold of like, this is what they look like, right?
You know? Oh, my God. Yeah, I did a couple of games last year on the radio out there, Lance, as you know, and Alcantara made a couple of throws from right field. I'm like, oh, my God, that's it athletically and with that particular skill, there's just – There's so much to like. All right, last thing. Give me a young pitcher who you think might end up getting some saves this year for the Cubs that people have not thought about. And I have one in mind, or people have not thought about enough. I have one in mind I want to ask you about, but I don't want to bait you. So tell me somebody in camp who could get some saves at some point this year.
I'll go with Jeremiah Estrada.
Yeah, that was my guy.
I figured that's where you're going.
I'll
find the question up there. Young guy getting saved, like they signed Boxberger and Fulmer.
It's just that ever since, like, it was a pivotal moment in my life where I learned that, oh, when they say the four-seamer carries, they're just talking about the absence of drop. So it does look like it does look like it rises. And, like, that's why we love it, and that's why it's so difficult. And then certain people, you watch them, and you're like, how the hell is he doing that? So that's Estrada to me. You know,
No, I agree with Estrada entirely. He's also a guy throwing the sweeper, right? Like, again, that hit I did qualified it to the guys that just added the pitch. But there's other guys in the org that have had the pitch for more than a year. I think Estrada learned it early last season, if I remember correctly. He's that two-seam super grip, same grip that Tyone and a guy like Michael Fulmer use. He gets behind the ball really well. That's why he's able to create that ride, that absence of drop that you're talking about. It works incredibly well at the top of the zone. I also love, from Cubs convention, Hayden Wesneski, and there was a panel of pitchers that were asked, if there was a pitch in the organization that you could add to your repertoire, whose would you take? And everyone was going to Kyle Hendricks' changeup and some other, you know, the popular answers, like, oh, Hendricks' sinker, Hendricks' changeup. Wisniewski goes, I want Jeremiah Estrada's fastball. And I was like, that is the correct answer. That is the answer, because that is the guy that looks at the data and understands that this pitch resists gravity by arguably, I think, almost more than a couple pitchers in baseball. I think he's, like, probably inside the 95th percentile in terms of how much hop, carry, ride, whatever you want to call it, that pitch has. And I think that could carry him, right? The command is okay. And as a reliever in a leverage situation, I think you really only need okay command. You have to pitch in the zone a couple times, and it's going to be really hard to barrel. I think he's a guy that will not allow a lot of home runs, won't be prone to, like, blow up, so to speak. And he also throws a good slider. Like, the slider's good. He gets behind it every now and then. I was actually talking to him in the clubhouse the other day about, you know, him having to kind of correct that and get that pitch to move a little more laterally. Sometimes it kind of just spins and doesn't take off left to right.
Yeah.
Or right to left, excuse me. So if he could polish that up, I think that's just another weapon to have. But he's honestly a guy that I think could throw the fastball 50, 60% of the time and succeed in a leverage role. So I love him.
Lance, thanks for welcoming us into the warm nerd cave.
It's warm in here.
Oh, it is. It's warm and you're able to speak it. And I think some of us even understood it. Like, it was exciting.
That's great. Yeah. I hope some of us understood it.
Lance, thanks so much, man. Have a great day.
Thanks, Matt.
You got it. That's Lance Brzdowski from the Marquee Sports Network. Yeah, man. That Estrada fastball, I want to see it. That was, let's be honest, that was for you, Sean Sears.
Yeah, I know.
You know. And I know that you know, I know you know. And I know that you know. But I think a lot of people do get stuff out of those kind of conversations, whether it all seeps in or not. You understand why some people are thought of as darlings and what a coup it was to get Wesneski and how much fun he could be to watch. I've been doing my top 30 Chicago ballplayers of my 30 baseball seasons here in town, and I've got one Cub coming up for you before the end of the show from my list. And I've got a White Sox player coming up next. And we'll also...
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the Markable Fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Talk about the ugly White Sox story from the pitching perspective and what it actually means since we got some data on it yesterday. Spiegs with you on Hit and Run till noon on The Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Trent Grisham will get into the left-handed batter's box to face Clevinger. Trent, 5 out of 23 with a homer and a double, testing out a little bit of a new approach at the plate. Ball at two strikes, here's the pitch. And Trent swings and misses, strike three. Well, fadeaway, maybe a changeup from the left-handed hitter.
Mostly off speed in that at bat. That's Trent Grisham out in front.
What was it like to see some of your former teammates as well?
It was good.
I feel like that was actually kind of comforting for my first time back out on the mound. To kind of have, you know, some guys that, you know, I've all went to war with that has been supporting me. And, you know, it's good to see them again. Good to see their faces and good to get them in the box.
That's Mike Clevenger talking about his first start in the spring. And there he was yesterday, and that was a strikeout of Trent Grisham, a former teammate in San Diego. Clevenger is now locked and loaded and will not be facing punishment from MLB and will be a White Sox starting pitcher. I want to say fifth starter because that was certainly the thought process, but he theoretically does have the stuff historically to be thought of a little bit higher. We'll see how often he can start and be available and how many starts he can make. You want a lot of starts out of Mike Clevenger. That's why you got him. It's why you paid him $12 million. He's got a six-pitch mix, does Clevenger. Throws the four-seam fastball the most. He does not really throw the two-seamer. He does throw a sinker a little bit, but four-seam fastball about 36% of the time. Then there's a slider. Then there is that sinker, the cutter. So all three of those around the 15 to 20% rate. There's a little bit of a changeup in there, a very occasional curveball in there. And in terms of velocity, his average fastball velocity, 28th percentile last year in MLB, which is not very good. Now, he's coming off an injury, coming off the second Tommy John. He's more than a year removed, so this should theoretically be a time and a moment when he steps back in. Let's hear Clevenger talk about his pitching. He said that he feels like he can use all of his capabilities this year with the White Sox.
Do you like the way your stuff is working today? You got four punch-outs, I guess, right?
So. Yeah. No, Metro, yeah. Stuff's really good.
Yeah.
Now it's just about sequencing and getting more reps.
Yeah. How does it feel to feel the way you do physically now after everything you've been through in the last year and a half or so?
I mean, it's a relief. It's a relief to go out there and just, like, pitch and just, you know, feel like I can explode and feel like I can kind of use 100% of my capability versus kind of feeling like I have a governor on and kind of feeling like I'm, you know, pitching with one leg tied behind my back instead of one arm. But, yeah, so it's awesome. It's a lot more fun, I'll tell you that.
So Clevenger's one of those guys, and I don't know if anybody's ever not seen him pitch. I feel like there's going to be some White Sox fans. The first time they sit down to watch this guy pitch, they're going to be like, what the hell is going on with this guy? And you should be aware because he's got to make big changes. This is a guy who sometimes would take a long time, so the pitch clock is an issue just in terms of time, but also in terms of the disengagement rule and just he is twitchy and very strange on the mound, like stepping left and right, kind of rocking back and forth. And when there's nobody on base, he does that a lot and kind of like leans back a little bit. And there might be a pause, a hitch in the giddy up, which is a way that I've always loved pitchers to be described. So visceral, isn't it? Where is the giddy up and where is the hitch? Is that below the belt? Is that above the belt? I don't know. But anyway, Clevenger, weird and twitchy and strange to watch on the mound. And he's got to work on that with the new rules and the new focus. And he knows that.
When they were doing the rules presentation, they were making a big emphasis on the lead foot coming to a stop. I noticed that you do kind of pause it right there. Is that something you've always done or is that an adjustment?
I kind of had to change my whole setup. So I was kind of used to face forward, but I kind of used to come to a stop. I would do my rocks, but then I would kind of step forward. So they didn't want me doing the step forward before backwards. So I turned to the side, I guess that kind of step kind of allowed that pause. Yeah.
Kind of going off of that, do you know notice anything about the pace of play?
I mean, the games are flying right now. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a much faster game, and I think everybody notices now if there's not a pitch clock or you're around a game that doesn't have that going on. So it's a very noticeable difference, especially talking the Baseball Classic guys.
Yeah, World Baseball Classic, no pitch clock, and it's been a palpable difference as these games have been dominating my television yesterday and today. I'm not looking forward to watching Mike Clevenger, I'll be honest with you. There's the feelings about some of the stuff, and then there's just I've never really enjoyed watching him. It's kind of crazy how he is, but how he pitches and what it is as a watch. But we'll see what the results are, and we'll see if Sox fans can embrace him and embrace the experience if the results are there. One guy the White Sox did embrace. Oh, that's the subject of my player that we're going to bring you. Every day at 4:45, Parkins and Spiegel, I go one player further on my list of my 30 favorite ball players in Chicago with the last 30 baseball seasons. So you have to have played a fair amount within those 30 seasons, beginning in 1993. And I've had a lot of fun, and they are archived. I will share that link in a little bit. And I wanted you to get a chance to hear me talk about the guy who was number 17 on the list.
Robin Ventura.
I first became aware of him, Danny, in high school because Ventura had a hitting streak at Oklahoma State. Anybody remember how long the hitting streak was at Oklahoma State?
Long.
58 games.
Yeah, it's a long one.
He beat DiMaggio. It's still the Division I record. Three-time All-American there. Led the nation in runs and RBI as a freshman at Oklahoma State. Hitting in the big leagues harder. He never hit better than 300 as a member of the White Sox. But in an eight-year stretch, years 3 through 10 of his career, the OPS dropped below 800 twice. Once it was 799, once it was 785. He hit over 285 times, hit 20 or more homers 5 times. He drove in 100 runs twice, more than 96 times. And he won 5 gold gloves while he was here. Became a fabulous defensive third baseman. This highlight precedes me in town, but it's Tanny's favorite of Robin's incredible 18 grand slams. This comes against Goose Gossage and the Texas Rangers in 1991.
High and deep to right field. They go back, look up. You can't put it on the board. Yes! A grand slam. Home run for Robin Ventura. And the Sox win it 10-8. Sweet swinging. Two out, bottom of the ninth inning. And a curtain call for Robin Ventura, well deserved. My goodness, can he do it on the last day of July?
That's pretty cool. Hawk and Wimpy going nuts, man. And here's the thing about his grand slams. He's tied with Willie McCovey for fifth at 18, okay? He did it in 294 homers. McCovey has 18 in 521 homers. Eddie Murray has 19 in 504 homers. Manny Ramirez, 21 in 555 homers. Lou Gehrig, 23, 493 homers. And A-Rod, 25 in almost 700 homers. That's nuts to me that Ventura has that many grand slams.
So 18 of his 294.
Yeah,
not a huge career total. Good number, but not a huge one to have that many grand slams. That is crazy.
Insane. My first season in town, 93, tumultuous for Robin. For one thing, that's the year he got his head noogied by Nolan Ryan.
Yeah.
Who was 20 years older than him.
Probably the thing he's most known for.
Yeah, I know. It's sad.
Yeah.
He hates that part of his legacy. I don't think he should. He attacked an all-time great, tried to hold his own. You know, he was doing what he thought was right. Tanny grabbed this from the Facing Nolan documentary about why Ventura did it. You'll hear the voices of Dave Winfield, Roger Clemens, Pete Rose, Pudge Rodriguez, and Nolan Ryan himself.
The White Sox were actually in the American League West at that time. Had Bo Jackson, and the Rangers had these battles with these guys. And so this one night, the White Sox said, if Nolan hits anybody tonight, whoever it is, you're going to go to the mound.
So there was a bounty on Nolan's head. If you get hit by Nolan and you don't charge the mound, it's going to cost you $500. Ventura happened to be the first one that day to get hit.
When Robin Ventura went out there, I just thought he wasn't quite serious. He wasn't fully committed.
Most guys who charge the mound, if you had a microphone on them, you could hear them say, grab me catcher, I don't want to get out there.
Before you could blink, Nolan had him like a baby calf in a headlock.
Grabbing like was grabbing a bull. I was right there, best seat in the house.
When I went down, I was on the bottom of the pile, and I was laying face first into the dirt. It was one of the scariest moments of my life. I couldn't breathe, and I really, truly thought that I was going to pass out. Then all of a sudden, this big arm came into the pile and reached under my shoulder and pulled me out, and it was Bo Jackson.
Man.
That's great.
He had no choice. $500
So he did it for $500 Man.
And he had teammate pressure.
Well, yeah, well, it was right. But
avoid paying $500
Right. That's what I'm saying. It was a $500 bounty. So and teammate pressure, like you said. But I wonder what Robin Ventura would pay to have not done it now, given that it's the number one thing that people think about. You think it's $50,000
Oh, God.
Like, you know what I mean? You think it's 100x what he would have had to pay in the moment?
Right after that segment of the documentary airs, there's a little thing on the screen. Robin Ventura declined to be interviewed
right.
for this documentary.
Yep, I'm sure he did.
Oh,
I'm sure he did.
Too bad. But that whole decade, man, it was Robin and Frank. He was Robin to Frank's Batman, obviously. The Big Hurt in Ventura. 97, I was a producer for McNeil and Boers. That spring training, Robin slid into home plate, got his cleat caught in the dirt, dislocated, and broke his ankle. It was freaking gruesome. And some people were like, he might never play again. He's out for the season. He busted his ass in rehab. He came back in late July, which is crazy that he was able to do that and had the game-winning hit that night. The legacy was tarnished by the managerial stint he agreed to out of obligation and loyalty. His best quality as a manager was that 5 months when he wasn't Ozzie Guillen at the beginning of 2012. Oral Hershiser really liked Robin, though.
He is not a stranger any place in the world. He lights up a room.
Not a stranger any place in the world, Danny.
That'd be tiring. I'd want to be a stranger someplace. I like being a stranger a lot of places.
I know.
Yeah.
But he lit up a room. Jerry Reinsdorf, at the end of his playing career, said Robin was deteriorating, and he let him leave in 99. He hit 301 with 32 homers and 120 RBIs for the Mets.
Mm.
Finished sixth in MVP voting. He is the best third baseman in the history of the White Sox. Tops at his position all time in homers, RBIs, and runs scored, and was super fun to watch. Offense, I give him a 9. Defense, I'll give him an 8. Vibes, I give him a 9. Teammateship, I give him a 9. And memorable moments, only a 7, because he only made the playoffs that one time, and he went 4-for-20 in the playoffs. But Robin Ventura, number 17 on the list. So fun to do these all March long, and we've got a few more to go. Number 14 will be on Parkinson Spiegel tomorrow afternoon at 4:45. Some Cubs stuff before we get out of here at the top of the hour, because the Cubs are indeed playing later on. We'll give you that broadcast info and a couple of nuggets, and you'll hear a very, very accomplished and, in my mind, underrated Cub profiled in my top 30 next on The Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
1-0. That's drilled. Deep left field, Trey Mancini, bye-bye.
Yeah, we've been playing really well lately. And like you said, it's spring training, but at the same time, you know, if you're playing a baseball game, you want to win. So, and it's always great to do that. So, yeah, it's been great to see.
That's Trey Mancini, who I think is going to have a big year as a Cub. Nice fit with the ballpark, nice fit on the roster, and thankfully a guy who can move over and play some right field. It's Hit and Run here. Matt Spiegel with you up until the top of the hour. A reminder that anytime we talk about the Cubs in spring training, it is sponsored by Sloan, official water efficiency partner of the Chicago Cubs. That's Cubs spring training on The Score. And Cubs Brewers coming up at 2:55 p.m. today. That'll be the pregame. That is indeed Pat and Ron. Starting lineup for the Cubs tonight is Nico Hoerner, Ian Happ in left, Dansby Swanson at short, Mancini is the DH, Cody Bellinger is in center. Eric Hosmer plays first. Patrick Wisdom in right field. Interesting. Nick Madrigal at third. Tucker Barnhart is the catcher, batting ninth. And Adrian Sampson is your starting pitcher. Nick Madrigal is going to have a tough time making this team, although his particular skill set would work well off the bench. Like, you need a single, you need contact in a big moment. Nicky Two Strikes could come up and certainly make you that contact. So maybe he's got a shot and has looked decent enough at third base. I'm sadly realizing that I think Christopher Morel and Nelson Velasquez are probably going to start at AAA. And Morel, who I enjoyed so much, enjoyed the personality for so much. I just, you know, Ross talks about it today with Pat Mooney in The Athletic and talks about you know, Morel, it's not fair to certain guys to have them play once every 8 or 10 days and expect their swing to hold together. You add that to the fact that Zach McKinstry's out of options, and I think Edwin Rios is probably a lock to make this team, and David Bodie's had a good camp. I think using one of your options on Morel and having him go down to AAA is likely. Before we get out of here, let's talk about one of the great third basemen in the history of the Cubs. Some would say the best. I still don't say quite the best, but pretty damn close. This man was at number 21, I believe. Or was it even higher? No, I think it was higher. It's number 18 on my list of the top 30 ballplayers from my 30 summers in Chicago. Aramis Ramirez.
An all-timer.
Best trade in Cubs history is probably Jake Arrieta and Pedro Strop for Scott Feldman,
yes,
and Steve Clevenger.
Yes.
But a close second is the deadline deal in 2003 when the Pirates were cutting payroll and they dealt Kenny Lofton and Aramis Ramirez to the Cubs for infielder Jose Hernandez and a prospect named Bobby Hill. An old-fashioned fleecing by the Cubs. Down the stretch of 03, 15 homers and 39 RBIs for Aramis Ramirez in 63 games that year. And he was terrific in the playoffs. A homer against the Braves in the first round series win. Then he tore up the Marlins on the way to what surely seemed like it was going to be a World Series, Danny, in 2003.
I remember.
Game 4 of the NLCS that season. A massively memorable moment for Aramis Ramirez.
No score. Cubs have a great chance. Bases loaded, one down. And the 2-2, swinging a high fly ball deep left field. Back goes Conine. Conine near the wall, looking up. That ball is a grand slam. It's a grand slam for Aramis Ramirez. Cubs lead 4-0. Right down the left field line. Towering home run. Cubs lead 4-0 in the first.
That's the third home run of the postseason for Ramirez. He's doubled his RBI output. This is not the same Dontrell Willis. We told you early that his stuff is short.
Cubs lead 4-0, first inning.
Man, that's good. Three homers, seven ribbies in that series for Aramis Ramirez. In the five seasons between 04 and 08, because you remember what happened, Danny, they went to the World Series. Remember Moises Alou made that catch of the pop-up along foul territory?
Yeah, exactly. I remember.
That was a great time.
Yeah.
Five seasons between 04 and 08, Aramis never hit less than 27 homers, never drove in fewer than 92 runs, never had an OPS, or had an OPS over 900 four times. One season it was at 898. He never struck out even 100 times. He was usually in the 60s and never had less than 500 plate appearances. Amazing run. Four times he placed in MVP voting, twice in the top 10. A dependable slugger. He struggled with looking lazy. He looked apathetic. Fans got frustrated. Bob Brenly got frustrated, said some controversial stuff about him. Mark DeRosa was on the score last year, I think at some point, talked about how some players hurt themselves by how easy things come to them.
A lot of my tough conversations with guys or comments that would kind of maybe be approached as a little, you know, kind of upset somebody, I did in the shower. Because at no point do I think that two men are going to go after it right there when they're stark naked with soap all over them. So I always felt like it was the perfect time to have a great conversation. I used to do it because I have a belief that Aramis Ramirez is one of the best players I ever played with. And I fell victim to it, too. I mean, Alan Trammell called me out my first year in 07 for taking plays off. I can remember it. So I remember with Aramis, I had such respect for how great a player he was and the ability to drive in runs, and that when he occasionally would dog it, I knew what the fans, you could see the reaction of all the Wrigley faithful, and I would go to him. I'm like, man, these people, you know, these people pay to come see you. They're not coming to see me or Terrio or Mike Fontenot or Reed Johnson or whoever. They come to see you, and you're better than that. I know you're better than that. I played against you since we were in Lynchburg. And he always took it like, yeah, it was a bad look. It was never met because Rammer knew I cared about him and knew what got him going and knew what made him tick.
His career / line in high-leverage situations, Danny, 301, 360, 521. That's an OPS in high leverage situations in the clutch of 881.
Damn.
June 29th, 2007. Wrigley Field is packed. Cubs are playing the Brewers. Cubs had won six in a row. We're right around 500, but looking like a team that might be able to take off. Brewers still had a 7.5 game lead in the Central. Aramis walked it off.
So now a one-run ball game. Last chance here. It's Ramirez. Fontenot still at first. The pitch to Aramis. There's a drive. Deep left center. Cubs win. They win it. Ramirez. Two-run shot. Oh, baby. Can you believe it?
That might be my favorite Len Casper call ever, by the way. Just realize that's damn good. Ramirez, it was just a great moment. Limited by injury for 2009 and 2010, but even his last year as a Cub was good. 306 batting average, 26 homers, 93 RBIs. Overall, 8.5 seasons as a Cub, 239 homers, 806 RBI. In the history of the franchise, he ranks third in slugging in the history of the franchise. Sixth in OPS, sixth in home runs, 12th in RBI. And is probably the second best third baseman in the history of the franchise next to Ron Santo, if not the first. Offense, I give him a 10. Defense, I give him a 7. There are a lot of errors. Vibes, I give him a 7. Teammateship, though, I'll give him a 9. And memorable moments, he gets a 9. So he adds up to 42, sits there at number 18 for the top 30. Super fun to do this list. Join us Monday through Friday at 4:45 on Parkinson Spiegel to have it updated. Thanks so much to our guest today, Lance Brozdowski from the Marquee Sports Network, Chuck Garfine from NBC Sports Chicago, and Mike Ferrin from MLB Radio on Sirius XM, who is calling the games today and tonight.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah. CBS Sports Radio is next. Cubs broadcast at 2:55. It's Zach Zaidman and Ron Coomer, so not Pat Hughes. I apologize about that, but anyway, should be an absolutely great day, and I'll be up watching USA-Mexico tonight. Have a great rest of the weekend, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to Hit and Run. Thank you, Sean Sears. Great job, as always.
Not at 0-2. He strikes out Ohtani. Satoria has the Czech Republic dugout going nuts.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
1-0. That's drilled. Deep left field, Trey Mancini, bye-bye.
Yeah, we've been playing really well lately. And like you said, it's spring training, but at the same time, you know, if you're playing a baseball game, you want to win. So, and it's always great to do that. So, yeah, it's been great to see.
That's Trey Mancini, who I think is going to have a big year as a Cub. Nice fit with the ballpark, nice fit on the roster, and thankfully a guy who can move over and play some right field. It's hit and run here. Matt Spiegel with you up until the top of the hour. A reminder that anytime we talk about the Cubs in spring training, it is sponsored by Sloan, official water efficiency partner of the Chicago Cubs. That's Cubs spring training on the Score. And Cubs Brewers coming up at 2:55 p.m. today. That'll be the pregame. That is indeed Pat and Ron. Starting lineup for the Cubs tonight is, or today, is Nico Hoerner, Ian Happ in left, Dansby Swanson at short, Mancini is the DH, Cody Bellinger is in center, Eric Hosmer plays first, Patrick Wisdom in right field, interesting, Nick Madrigal at third, Tucker Barnhart is the catcher, batting ninth, and Adrian Sampson is your starting pitcher. Nick Madrigal is going to have a tough time making this team, although his particular skill set would work well off the bench. Like, you need a single, you need contact in a big moment. Nicky Two Strikes could come up and certainly make you that contact. So maybe he's got a shot and has looked decent enough at third base. I'm sadly realizing that I think Christopher Morel and Nelson Velasquez are probably going to start at AAA. And Morel, who I enjoyed so much, enjoyed the personality for so much. I just, you know, Ross talks about it today with Pat Mooney in The Athletic and talks about, you know, Morel, it's not fair to certain guys to have them play once every 8 or 10 days and expect their swing to hold together. You add that to the fact that Zach McKinstry's out of options, and I think Edwin Rios is probably a lock to make this team, and David Bodie's had a good camp. I think using one of your options on Morel and having him go down to AAA is likely. Before we get out of here, let's talk about one of the great third basemen in the history of the Cubs. Some would say the best. I still don't say quite the best, but pretty damn close. This man was at number 21, I believe. Or was it even higher? No, I think it was higher. It's number 18 on my list of the top 30 ballplayers from my 30 summers in Chicago. Aramis Ramirez.
An all-timer.
Best trade in Cubs history is probably Jake Arrieta and Pedro Strop for Scott Feldman,
yes,
and Steve Clevenger.
Yes.
But a close second is the deadline deal in 2003 when the Pirates were cutting payroll and they dealt Kenny Lofton and Aramis Ramirez to the Cubs for infielder Jose Hernandez and a prospect named Bobby Hill. An old-fashioned fleecing by the Cubs. Down the stretch of 03, 15 homers and 39 RBIs for Aramis Ramirez in 63 games that year, and he was terrific in the playoffs. A homer against the Braves in the first round series win. Then he tore up the Marlins on the way to what surely seemed like it was going to be a World Series, Danny, in 2003.
I remember.
Game 4 of the NLCS that season, a massively memorable moment for Aramis Ramirez.
No score, Cubs have a great chance, bases loaded, one down. And the 2-2. Swinging a high fly ball deep left field. Back goes Conine. Conine near the wall looking up. That ball is a grand slam. It's a grand slam for Aramis Ramirez. Cubs lead 4-0. Right down the left field line. Towering home run. Cubs lead 4-0 in the first.
That's the third home run of the postseason for Ramirez. He's doubled his RBI output. This is not the same Dontrell Willis. We told you early that his stuff is short.
Cubs lead 4-0 first inning.
Man, that's good. Three homers, seven ribbies in that series for Aramis Ramirez. In the five seasons between 04 and 08, because you remember what happened, Danny, they went to the World Series. Remember Moises Alou made that catch of the pop-up along foul territory?
Yeah, exactly. I remember.
That was a great time.
Yeah.
Five seasons between 04 and 08, Aramis never hit less than 27 homers, never drove in fewer than 92 runs, never had an OPS, or had an OPS over 900 four times. One season it was at 898. He never struck out even 100 times. He was usually in the 60s and never had less than 500 plate appearances. Amazing run. Four times he placed in MVP voting, twice in the top 10. A dependable slugger. He struggled with looking lazy. He looked apathetic. Fans got frustrated. Bob Brenly got frustrated, said some controversial stuff about him. Mark DeRosa was on the Score last year, I think at some point, talked about how some players hurt themselves by how easy things come to them.
a lot of my tough conversations with guys or comments that would kind of maybe be approached as a little, you know, kind of upset somebody, I did in the shower. Because at no point do I think that two men are going to go after it right there when they're stark naked with soap all over them. So I always felt like it was the perfect time to have a great conversation. I used to do it because I have a belief that Aramis Ramirez is one of the best players I ever played with. And I fell victim to it, too. I mean, Alan Trammell called me out my first year in 07 for taking plays off. I can remember it. So I remember with Aramis, I had such respect for how great a player he was and the ability to drive in runs, and that when he occasionally would dog it, I knew what the fans, you could see the reaction of all the Wrigley faithful, and I would go to him. I'm like, man, these people, you know, these people pay to come see you. They're not coming to see me or Terrio or Mike Fontenot or Reed Johnson or whoever. They come to see you, and you're better than that. I know you're better than that. I played against you since we were in Lynchburg. And he always took it like, yeah, it was a bad look. It was never met because Rammer knew I cared about him and knew what got him going and knew what made him tick.
His career slash line in high leverage situations, Danny, 301, 360, 521. That's an OPS in high leverage situations in the clutch of 881.
Damn.
June 29th, 2007. Wrigley Field is packed. Cubs are playing the Brewers. Cubs had won six in a row. We're right around 500, but looking like a team that might be able to take off. Brewers still had a 7.5-game lead in the Central. Aramis walked it off.
So now a one-run ball game. Last chance here. It's Ramirez. Fontenot still at first. The pitch to Aramis. There's a drive. Deep left center. Win! They win it! Ramirez, two-run shot! Oh, baby! Can you believe it?
That might be my favorite Len Casper call ever, by the way. Just
that
realize that's damn good. Ramirez, that was just a great moment. Limited by injury for 2009 and 2010, but even his last year as a Cub was good. 306 batting average, 26 homers, 93 RBIs. Overall, 8.5 seasons as a Cub, 239 homers, 806 RBI. In the history of the franchise, he ranks third in slugging in the history of the franchise. Sixth in OPS, sixth in home runs, 12th in RBI. And is probably the second best third baseman in the history of the franchise next to Ron Santo, if not the first. Offense, I give him a 10. Defense, I give him a 7. There are a lot of errors. Vibes, I give him a 7. Teammateship, though, I'll give him a 9. And memorable moments, he gets a 9. So he adds up to 42, sits there at number 18 for the top 30. Super fun to do this list. Join us Monday through Friday at 4:45 on Parkinson Spiegel to have it updated. Thanks so much to our guest today, Lance Brozdowski from the Marquee Sports Network, Chuck Garfine from NBC Sports Chicago, and Mike Ferrin from MLB Radio on Sirius XM, who is calling the games today and tonight.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah. CBS Sports Radio is next. Cubs broadcast at 2:55. It's Zach Zaidman and Ron Coomer, so not Pat Hughes. I apologize about that. But anyway, should be an absolutely great day, and I'll be up watching USA-Mexico tonight. Have a great rest of the weekend, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to Hit and Run. Thank you, Sean Sears. Great job, as always.
Not at 0-2. He strikes out Ohtani. Satoria has the Czech Republic dugout going nuts.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
What?
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.